You're with us for the morning show as we discuss the Paris Climate Agreement. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President-elect Joe Biden campaigned on a platform to spend as much as $1.7 trillion over 10 years to cut emissions and boost renewable energy. But the ambitious plan to tackle climate change takes a willing Congress to spend. President Trump rolled back or weakened more than 125 environmental regulations. That's a Washington Post tally. What needs to happen on climate change here in the U.S. and around the world? How do you feel about the Paris Agreement? Should the U.S. get back in? We're at 800-642-1234. Gene Shimnick covers international climate policy for E&E News. Gene, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, before we get into the politics of the Paris Agreement, can you remind us and explain what the countries that signed on to the Paris Accord in 2016 were agreeing to?
Well, I mean, it's a framework for countries to put forward their own what is called nationally determined contributions or pledges of emissions reductions, adaptation, and other actions. And, you know, it requires countries to have a pledge and to maintain those pledges and update them with the hope that, it'll keep the world's temperature below 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees Celsius, you know, and in a safe level.
So, over the last 4 years, then, have you seen any fluctuation in the number of countries getting into the Paris Climate Agreement or backing out?
No. The U.S. is actually the only country on Earth that has left the Paris Agreement. And that happened the day after the election, you know, November 4th, just last week. We're the only one that has ever withdrawn. No other countries have seriously signaled that they're planning to leave. So we're standing alone outside it right now.
How significant is the U.S. leaving the Paris Agreement?
Well, it was seen as a major blow. The Paris Agreement was the product of, you know, more than two decades of negotiation. It was very hard fought. The Obama administration played a major role in brokering the deal. And so President Trump's decision to withdraw the U.S. from the deal was a blow. It probably has an effect on the ambition of other countries that remain in the agreement because, you know, why should they put forward very ambitious pledges if the U.S., which is the second, you know, largest emitter and the largest economy, is not doing anything?
Yeah, it almost makes you feel like the agreement could be fragile or that countries, as you mentioned, may not stick to those ambitious plans. But we now see a sea change, if you will, with President-elect Joe Biden, who is saying, no, the U.S. is going to get back into the agreement. What do you see there?
Well, you know, the president-elect has said that on day one, which one assumes is January 20th, that he will put the U.S. back in the Paris Agreement. The nuts and bolts are that there's a 30-day waiting period, you know, and all he has to do is send, you know, instruments of accession to the UN, and we're back in 30 days. There is a problem, which is that you do need to have a target, an emissions target, in order to be in Paris, and his administration will not have time to write a meaningful one in 30 days. So the U.S. either will have to put in some kind of a placeholder and then work quickly to put together a target, or the U.S. will immediately be out of compliance with the deal when it reenters in February.
We're talking with Gene Shimnick, who is a reporter at E&E News. We're looking at the future of climate policy in our country under the Biden administration and what it means for the Paris Climate Agreement. Taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Karen is joining us from Iowa County this morning. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your program, and I'm so delighted that you're leading with this topic, which is COVID is our biggest threat short range, but failure to act on climate is our biggest threat long range. I had the honor of attending the talks in 2018 in Poland, on behalf of Rotary International as their participant, or as an observer delegate. And just before the climate talks, they released a when we did Paris, we thought keeping the warming to 2 degrees was enough. Now we realize we have to keep it lower at 1.5 degrees. And the terrible truth I learned there was, if even if every country had kept their commitment, no one was going to meet 2 degrees. The only country on track to meet, the only country on track was Germany, and it fell behind when it turned off its nuclear plants and went to coal. Our time to act is about 10 years, and not only does the U.S. have a big role as an emitter, but we have a position of, or have had a position of moral leadership in the world. It's a global crisis that will affect every nation, but the poorest nations most. The U.S. needs to lead. The best thing about Biden is being back in the climate accord.
Well, Karen brings up a lot of interesting information here, and being firsthand observer in 2018 in Poland. Jean, you know, as Karen says, even if everyone honors their commitment to Paris, it's not enough.
That's true. The way Paris dealt with that was that every 5 years it requires it asks countries to come back to the table with stronger and stronger pledges. And the task for a new Biden administration will be, there was already a 2025 pledge that the Obama administration put forward. The U.S. will not meet that at this point. It would have actually taken additional effort over and above what the Obama policies were to meet that. We will blow past that, but the next step is the 2030 target, and the Biden administration will have to put something together for that, which will be complicated by the fact that the likelihood is that Republicans will retain the Senate, but, you know, states and local governments and companies are doing things, too, and probably what they'll have to do is rely heavily on those actions to show enough progress, again, to start pointing towards that 1.5 or 2 degrees
what
limit
have you,
that she was mentioning.
Yeah. You know, what have you seen out of state and local governments and how they view the Paris Agreement?
Well, during the Trump years, there were a couple of important initiatives. There was America Sledge, which was, Governor Brown out of California and Mike Bloomberg, their effort, which tried to quantify what states and local governments and industry was already doing, sort of to show the world that the U.S. is still doing things despite what the federal government was doing. And then also there's We're Still in Coalition, which is also a coalition of local governments and state governments. And states are. They have been increasing the ambition of their policies throughout the Trump years, and the market has changed to the point where renewables are becoming less and less expensive and more competitive. So, you know, there are, you know, meaningful things to show in that arena. And I think what the Biden administration is going to have to do is to quantify those things and say, look, the U.S. is actually acting, even if all of that action is not coming from the federal government.
Jean Shimnick reports on international climate policy for E&E News. We're discussing what happens next with U.S. environmental policy and the Paris Climate Agreement, with President-elect Joe Biden pushing his climate plan. How do you feel about how climate was addressed in the presidential campaign? What does a workable environmental agenda look like to you? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Jean Shimnick here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Paris Climate Agreement and what happens next for the U.S. in fighting climate change. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The U.S., we're the world's biggest economy. We are the second biggest emitter of greenhouse gases. President-elect Joe Biden has promised to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement, put our country on a plan to lower emissions over the next decade, dramatically lower emissions. What do you think? Is this possible? What needs to happen on our changing climate here in the U.S. and around the world? 800-642-1234. Jean Shimnick covers international climate policy for E&E News, and she stays with us. Let's take another call now. Jill is joining us from Madison. Hi, Jill. What would you like to say about climate policy?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a, I don't know if it's a question, what your guest thought about back when COVID first started and everybody was told to stay home, there was no vehicles on the road, there was a small blurb in the news stating that the air quality was getting better. How can, you know, vehicles that are on the road now, could there be incentives for people to switch out to electric? Or, I mean, our vehicles are on the road all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the bigger of, like, the top five emissions causing issues that we have in the U.S.
Jill, thank you. Jean, what did we see out of vehicles and their impact on the climate during even the early days of the pandemic and then now?
You know, I didn't cover that directly, but mm-hmm. I did see that there was a dip in carbon emissions and other emissions and, you know, smog and soot. Early in the pandemic, when everyone was staying home, there were stories, especially out of China, about how clean their air suddenly was. But I think much of that has rebounded.
Yeah.
You know, I would have to go back and look at exactly what the data is, but people have been tracking that, and I don't think it was. I think it was probably relatively meaningful, but probably not very durable. But you know, to the point about what can be done going forward, I know that the Biden plan has incentives for electric vehicle technology. That's probably something that he'll try to push as part of an economic stimulus package to respond to the COVID recession. You know, I mean, that's one of the few opportunities if the Senate remains Republican to try to move legislation is attaching it to a spending bill for other infrastructure and for getting the economy back in shape after the pandemic. So that kind of thing, there could be some progress there, and states are starting to move also in terms of, you know, creating incentives for electric vehicles and for other cleaner technologies.
President Trump has weakened or rolled back more than 125 rules and policies related to the environment. There are dozens more underway, according to the Post. How difficult would it be for the incoming administration to restore previous efforts?
Well, there's a process, except for rules that are finalized very late in the Trump presidency, like now, can be rolled back pretty quickly. Actually, there's a process in place to get rid of them. But for other rules, you have to go through a rulemaking process. A rulemaking process can take months or years. You have to, you know, and in some cases you have to ask the courts to basically, because a rule is being litigated, to send the rule back to EPA usually, or whatever agency is responsible, so that they can rewrite it, and so the courts might have a say. So there's a process. It's not true that all 100 plus rules will be reversed the first day of the, you know, Biden administration. It's likely to take a couple years to do that. And also, of course, the courts have shifted, and, you know, the Biden administration will have to look at what this new, more conservative court, Supreme Court, will mean for the kinds of rules that they can promulgate.
We're talking with Jean Shimnick, reporter at E&E News. We're looking at what's next in climate policy for the U.S. under a new administration, talking about the Paris Climate Agreement. With your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. Mike is joining us from Roche Holt. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. If we're the number two emitter, who is number one? And from what I heard from the Biden administration, that they plan on giving China an exemption from this Paris Accord. And why is that?
And China being the biggest emitter of greenhouse gases, Gene, can you explain that?
Yeah, well, I mean, China's the biggest emitter, yes. It's been a talking point of the Trump administration that China gets an exemption to the Paris Agreement. That isn't true. China is a very, very large economy, and it's still a developing economy, and it's bringing a huge amount of new, especially power infrastructure, but also manufacturing online still, as the U.S., you know, is already in a developed country, and we're bringing on, we have less new demand in terms of electricity. So China, you know, has still been building some coal, whereas the U.S. hasn't, but that's slowing. Well, it's slowing as a percentage of what they're bringing on, and they're bringing on a lot of renewable energy too. And they've made a commitment to stop growing their emissions by 2030, which means building a huge amount of new non-carbon, you know, power, especially infrastructure. But they're actually going to do that many years earlier. They kind of under-promised and will probably over-deliver, according to analysts that work in China that watch what they're actually doing. And they also might strengthen their pledge. So there isn't an exemption. I mean, one of the things that the U.S. really fought for in Paris, there was actually pressure to have only rich countries do the hard work of being required to make emissions reductions. But the U.S. negotiators said, well, this really just isn't going to fly at home. You know, there's no way that we'll be able to join this deal if that's how it's structured. So they fought extremely hard over many, many years to make sure that it was a deal that would really cover everyone the same way. And the way it works is that every country puts forward what they want to do and think they can do. And there's some, you know, hope that that will become more and more ambitious, but there's no guarantee that it will. And, you know, our country puts forward what it wants to do, and so does China.
Let's bring in Michael now in Racine with a question. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Thanks for bringing me on. I want to go back to the idea about what we can do next and the emissions question that came out earlier. I drive a hybrid here in Wisconsin, and I am a little appalled that my registration bill was higher because I drive a hybrid. And I understand the logic behind it from a tax perspective. I'm paying less road tax because I'm buying less gasoline. But wouldn't the next step be to incentivize people to buy these vehicles and not to charge me more for having a vehicle that's fuel efficient? I just want to get comments on that if possible. And I'll take them offline. Thank you.
Michael, thank you for that. And Gene, what can you say there about incentivizing drivers to drive cleaner, you know, burning engines on their vehicles?
Yeah, I don't cover that closely. We have a transportation reporter who does much more closely. You know, I think that states, and it might be that the Biden administration would introduce proposals to do that. I'm really not sure.
Sure. Very quickly, I want to make sure that we cover the Green New Deal. We have a caller here who wants to talk about the Green New Deal as well. But I, because we're short on time, I just want to ask you, what is the status of this with President-elect Joe Biden and what he is facing going in with other Democrats, and then in terms of Congress?
Well, I mean, the Green New Deal relied very heavily on Congress, yes, on a unified, very progressive, Democrat-controlled, you know, House and Senate, and that is not what has been elected, I think. You know, the Biden proposal also included a bunch of spending and some other things, and it's questionable. It'll be interesting to see what aspects of that are possible with the current makeup of the Congress, but it wasn't quite the Green New Deal. And I think that the Green New Deal, it was always a little unclear exactly what there was. There were certain, you know, proposals that were put forward. It's more of an idea of, you know, a big sweeping environmental and economic package. And that idea is still out there. It still has resonance. for very progressive, lawmakers and people, and it will probably still be influential. But in terms of, legislating it right now, there is a major, roadblock in the fact that the Senate is likely to remain Republican.
2 or 3 seconds here, Jean. What are you watching most closely in environmental policy in these days, coming days?
Well, I'm looking at who, Biden taps to play various key roles in his administration, and that's likely to start coming out around Thanksgiving and into December, because that'll show where he's going on these issues, the kinds of people he chooses, whether they're fairly moderate or whether they're very progressive. And there's some ideas about how to better integrate climate change into everything the federal government does, whether he might create a new office within the White House to make sure that it sort of permeates all policy.
Well,
Jean, does he do that?
Thank you for joining us. Jean Shimnick, reporter at E&E News. Coming up, we take a look at the dairy industry after this news update on the Ideas Network.